live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Pats 41, Chargers 28. It wasn't even that close. Not nearly that close. Not even remotely. Clemson, Alabama, cannot believe what a beatdown New England, Los Angeles was. I mean, I'm telling you, it was stunning. I never saw something like that coming. And the truth is, I should have. Not because of the Chargers, but because of the Patriots. This is who they are. This is what they do. And let me say one thing before we really get started here. If you're looking to call or email or tweet with the thought of putting this loss on Philip Rivers, here's my best advice to you. Shut the hell up. Don't bring that around here. Take your phone or your computer, light them on fire. Back over them in your car. Do both, because that's a really bad take. That loss is not on Philip Rivers. I mean, did the guy play his best game ever? No. He'd be the first one to tell you that too. But every single time that guy dropped back to pass, a couple of pats were right in his chest. And if you think the Chargers lost because he was yelling at the refs or his teammates, you also could not be more wrong about that either. Don't put it on him. And so now I get to eat a nice steaming pile of crow. And let me tell you something else while I'm doing it, while I'm throwing that down my esophagus. I'm never, never picking against the Pats ever again. Never. Because when I went with the Chargers, I was violating the rule that I myself had repeated time and time again this year, that the Patriots are done when Tom Brady and Bill Belichick say they are done. That's a fact. You think Nick Foles is some kind of playoff zombie? Nick Foles is incredible, but he needs to do what he's done the last 2 years for another decade and a half before he reaches Tom Brady and Bill Belichick zombie level status. So let me repeat this again. The Patriots are done when Tom Brady and Bill Belichick say they are done, and not a second before. You come in with a cool seven defensive back scheme that destroyed a Super Bowl winning head coach last week. Doesn't matter. Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels will humiliate you with their scheme, pick you apart, and embarrass you. They average more than 8 yards per play on their first 25 plays. Throughout most of the first half, the Pats had more first downs than the Chargers had offensive plays. That's how big of a mismatch that turned out to be. You know, the Patriots, the rap, they look old, they look slow, they look gassed out, they look banged up. Doesn't matter. Here are touchdowns on their first 4 drives of the game and 35 points in the first half. Bill Belichick can't find a pass rush. Remember that rap coming in? Can't find a pass rush. Doesn't matter. Here are guys burying Rivers on every single drop back. How about Gronk? Remember Gronk looking close to retirement? Doesn't matter. He's throwing fools around and putting on an absolute clinic as a blocker. I mean, seriously, that was poetry. It doesn't matter that he caught only one pass yesterday. That was one of his best games in a long time. How about Julian Edelman? He also was supposed to be not the same guy. He missed 4 games with a banned substance at the start of the season. That didn't matter. 9 receptions, 151 yards, and 1 back-breaking first down after another. And his yards after the catch were absurd. Like, you can say anything and everything you want about how the Patriots are done. And a lot of it was fair, honestly. You know, they'd lost 2 of their last 4 coming in. They didn't look great. So say what you want about the fact that they're done, but then they somehow, some way, can show up in January in Foxborough and pick you apart. And that's exactly what they did to the Chargers. Now, I did get a couple of things right about that game. I told you Sony Michel would have to have a huge game. He did. 138 yards from scrimmage, 3 TDs. I also said that James White would have to have a huge game. He did. 15 receptions, 97 yards on Wisconsin. I'm not sure if that game was over before it started, but it was definitely over after that first drive. An absolute masterclass from McDaniels. Look, I know this guy did his reputation no favors by how he handled things with the Colts last year, and the Colts are better for how he handled things last year. But let me tell you something. It made you forget that he was a brilliant offensive mind, but he reminded you of that yesterday. That 14-play drive that ate up more than 7 minutes was not just a message for the Chargers. That was for everybody everywhere. And that drive had a little bit of everything. Screens, runs, dinks, dunks, and a TD. You know, they won that coin toss. They did not defer. They knew what they were doing. Early in the game, the only question wasn't whether the Patriots would win, but whether Tom Brady's coat could get any bigger than it was. Did you get a load of this guy and that jacket? Was that even a jacket? Or did this guy just wrap himself up in the tarp that covers the field? It's not a coat. It was a circus tent. And the only thing bigger than that jacket was the chip on the shoulder underneath it. Everything everybody said about that team this past week, they heard. And they even heard some things that nobody was saying. And they used it all, as Brady said after the game, quote, "I know everybody thinks we suck.
You know, everyone thinks we suck and, you know, can't win any games, so we'll see."
Like I said, there were some things that were said about that team, maybe even about that guy. I don't remember anybody saying we suck or they suck, much less everybody saying they suck. But, you know, you hear what you want to hear. Devin McCourty had his ears and eyes open as well.
"Our quarterback's too old. We're not good enough on defense. You know, skill players aren't good. We see it."
They did, boy. They did see it. And if you thought the Patriot players were running on some premium fuel, check out the filthy, nasty trash talk from their head coach.
"Played a good game today."
"Played a good game today." Did you hear him?
"Played a good game today."
And that really is the equivalent of the hoodie showing up to the presser, tapping on the mic and saying, "Is this thing on? Hello? Hello, is this thing on? Good. Let me start off by asking, tell me how my ass tastes.
Tell me how my ass tastes."
That's the kind of attitude and edge that this group is playing with. Everything you think about them is wrong, and every time you try to bury these guys, they come up out of the ground, they rip the shovel out of your hand, and they bludgeon you with it. I cannot believe how good they looked. And I'm not doing that again. I'm done. I'm done with that. They could start next season 0-15, and I still would not rule them out of sneaking into the postseason as a 6 and winning the Super Bowl. Check back in 30 years. Tommy and Billy rolling out of the tunnel on their matching Rascal scooters, and I'd still say they're going to win. So, one more time, one last time, the Patriots are done when Tom Brady and Bill Belichick say they're done, and not a second before. And as disappointing as the Chargers were, the Patriots were that unbelievable. And I've got no problem smashing this Crosando. No excuses, no problem smashing that Sando, because the Pats effectively just jammed it right down my trachea. Unbelievable performance. Cameron Jordan is my guest. Cameron, what's up? How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me back on.
My man, so good to have you back on. In fact, I was going to start there by saying you and I have had a chance to talk on the day after a lot of big wins over the years. But I got to ask, what's it like to wake up Monday morning when you're in the NFC Championship game and you're one win away from the Super Bowl? How's that feel?
I'm just trying to focus on the next game. So I'm not even thinking big picture yet, but it feels pretty good to have, you know, played a hard 60 minutes, come out with a great win, and earn another chance to play another 60 minutes.
All right, fair enough. So when that game starts off, it didn't start the way, obviously, that you would have liked from either an offensive or defensive standpoint, but nobody seemed to panic whatsoever. When Philadelphia took that 14-0 lead, what was the mood like on the sideline, and what were you guys telling each other?
We're in the thick of things. We're in the middle of this fight. And honestly, there's no other team that, you know, I'd say it feels more confident being two touchdowns down in the first quarter. We knew we were going to take, you know, we have to withstand their best shots in that first quarter. We knew that, you know, they were going to come out hot and, you know, try and be a different team than they were the first time we played them. But at the same time, it was up to us to play to our standards. I feel like, this entire season this body of work has told you that we're going to play all 60 minutes every game, every chance we get is another opportunity for us to try and make a statement.
Hey, listen up. I want to talk to you about Robinhood. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everybody and not just the wealthy. Here's what I like best about it. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every single trade, but Robinhood does not charge commission fees. You can trade stocks and keep all of your profits. Also, there are easy-to-understand charts and market data. You can place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. And the Robinhood web platform also lets you check out stock collections and analyst ratings of buy, hold, and sell for every single stock. And you can learn by doing. Learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks and track favorite companies with a personalized news feed. And there are custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. And on top of all that, Robinhood is giving you a free stock like Apple or Ford or Sprint to help build your portfolio. Sign up at jimrome.robinhood.com. That's jimrome.robinhood.com. Cameron Jordan joining us. Exactly. And it was a significant statement. Now, speaking of being in a fight, did I see you with some Mike Tyson punch out cleats yesterday? And if so, what's the story behind that?
Just that, you know, we knew we were going to be in a fight. You know, the first time we played go around, you know, we said it doesn't matter how long the fight is. It doesn't matter how many rounds we have to go. We're going to come out with this win. And, you know, second time around is no different. Different quarterback at helm, you know, a playoff magical, you know, I called him Rondo-esque in the playoffs. when you talk about just the ability of what he's able to do. And we knew we were going to be in a dogfight. So I had some ready to rumble. I had Afro Thunder on one cleat. I had Mike Tyson punch out in the next cleat. And just, you know, just that same mentality of it's going to be a dogfight. Got to be able to come out on top.
Cameron Jordan joining us. So Marshawn Lattimore had the pick that sealed the game. Can you take me through that play? What did you see on it, and what was your reaction when you saw that ball go through Alshon Jeffrey's hands and Lattimore picked it off?
I mean, that's a huge play. For him to end up with two interceptions this game, that's huge for our defense. You talk about, you know, the preparation for this week. Everything that encompasses what it takes to game week for it to come out the way it did. I mean, that's just a huge situation for us. He ends up with the interception, go to block the intended Alshon, and you know, after we secure the win, after we secure the interception, you know, I try to go check on my man, but you know, I think that our confidence, our ability to play at such a high standard showed through.
You know, I was going to ask you that. I saw you go to check on your man. Did you say anything to Alshon Jeffrey?
No, I was like, you know, I just put the hand out, like, you know, waiting for him to turn over so I can try and help him up. That never happened. So, you know, I understand what it's like to be, you know, on the losing side of a big game. I understand that, you know, you always want to put your team in the best position to win. And at the end of the day, you know, once the game was secured, again, compassion can take back the heart. You know, you're able to feel the emotions of, you know, the implications of the game, of the catch, of the play. So, you know, he sort of stayed down the whole time. So his teammates came to rally again around him, and I let that be that.
Cameron Jordan joining us. You know, you talk about being put in a position to win the game. Sean Payton, I think, put you guys in a good position to win the game. Go back earlier in that game. What did you make of him calling that fake punt and then Taysom Hill converting it?
You know, I've said over and over, you know, how confident we are in all three phases of our game, and how confident Sean is apparently, you know, to go for that, to not only have confidence in the special teams to get that first down, but again, to have confidence in the defense, just in case it becomes a short field situation, we know that we can come up with a big play to make it back in our favor.
Cameron Jordan joining me for a few more moments. You know, there's that now legendary story from last week about Peyton showing up with a Lombardi, armed guards, stacks and stacks of cash. Good story. What was your reaction to that whole thing when you first saw it?
Stories are stories. Legends are legends. I will confirm no validity of so said knowledge, but I do know that we have a mission that we have to accomplish, and we're focused on that mission.
My man, I can respect that you can't confirm any semblance of that happening, but I think Mark Ingram already did.
That's something you'd have to take away with Mark, because this guy here, what happens in the Saints facility, stays in the Saints facility. If there was, so said, encased amount of money, you know, I would say that it is jaw-dropping to see something like that, and then continue on with saying that, you know, you can't put the cart before the horse. You have to focus on every game like it's the last game, because we're now in single elimination mode.
My man, I couldn't respect that anymore. I respect that this guy here is saying that. Let me just ask you, do you want that in 50s or 100s?
direct deposit, doesn't matter to me.
Cameron Jordan joining us. Let me finally ask you, what did you think when you guys went on that 11-minute, 29-second drive, what's going through your head as you're on the sideline watching the offense go to work the way it did?
I'm chomping at the bit to get back on the field. You know, you got to do everything you can to keep the legs warm.
Right.
You know, at the end of the day, that just shows how much poise and confidence Drew has. That shows the confidence that he has in our offensive line and the ability that our offensive line has to sort of take over a game like that.
Hey, Cam, actually, I lied. One last thought. Are you still enjoying that one, or have you started to think about the L.A. Rams, and what are your initial thoughts about going up against them again?
You know, fully enjoyed the win last night, but it's a new day. Normally it's a 24-hour rule, but this is the playoffs. This is something serious. We're going to start breaking down the Rams in no less than 6 minutes.
All right, then. If you got 6 minutes to start that, I better let you go. Listen, appreciate you very much. As I said, you and I have had a lot of conversations the day after big wins. Really nice to have you on this morning. Thank you.
Much appreciated, always. Thanks for having me on.
If you're like me and you've got a mortgage and a family who depends on your income, then you need to protect the ones you love with life insurance. Life insurance can pay off a mortgage or help send the kids to college. It's peace of mind. You think you can't afford it? Chances are, SelectQuote can help you get it for less than $1 a day. SelectQuote Comparison shops up to 10 highly rated companies, including Prudential, Banner Life, and Mutual of Omaha, and others, to find you the company with the very best rates. Here's an example. SelectQuote could find a 35-year-old man a $500,000 policy for under $19 a month, or a 37-year-old female a $750,000 policy for under $22 a month. Listen, I've done this. I understand that buying life insurance can be complicated. It can be intimidating. This is why you need SelectQuote. It's going to save you money. It's going to save you time. And yes, you want life insurance. It's important. Let SelectQuote save you time and money. Get your free quote at SelectQuote.com/Rome today. Again, SelectQuote.com/Rome for your free quote. Do not put off protecting your family for even one more day. SelectQuote.com/Rome. Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your premium could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states. So the Patriots had something for all their critics, me and everybody else, on Sunday. But the Rams did their work on Saturday, and they did work, and then they talked. You see, going into that game, the Dallas Cowboys were doing a lot of talking. The Cowboys were on a roll. The Cowboys had turned their season around. They beat Seattle in the wild card game. They were feeling it. The Cowboys were acting like they had just won the Super Bowl. That's how much talking they were doing. Then again, you go as long as the Cowboys have without winning a playoff game, that probably did feel like winning the Super Bowl to them. So they were enjoying the hell out of it, and they were talking a lot. DeMarcus Lawrence told reporters earlier in the week that he had plans for Jared Goff.
I don't like quarterbacks. So my impression is the same. I go into every week, you know, wanting to take a quarterback's soul.
All right, so I don't like quarterbacks, and I've got the same plan every single week. I'm looking to take a quarterback soul. Now, this guy generally, he talks a lot, but he backs it up, generally. He was not the only guy talking. Amari Cooper was doing some talking. Cooper said he had an edge because he had faced Aqib Talib and Marcus Peters when he was with Oakland and they played in the AFC West.
You know, I played against those guys twice a year, both of them. I know them in and out. I know how they play. And I'm able to tell, like, my teammates or quarterback, you know, their tendencies.
So they were doing a lot of talking and on record. And 130-22 win later, here is what Talib and Peters were saying right back. Talib busted into a national TV interview of Jared Goff so he could tell everybody that DeMarcus Lawrence ain't talk, taking no bleeping soul.
We know this defense, and we prepared for it well all week, and what Todd and CJ did this week.
Talib, excuse the language, he's a little excited.
I'll bleep that one.
Yeah, well,
he's
we're
right,
live.
Though. He's right. But
Chris Myers talking to Jared Goff. And then he had Peters yelling at the Cowboys as they left the field. I can't repeat what he was yelling, but it was just as spicy. He later said, quote, "That was for Amari Cooper. He got strapped today." He said he knew us. Looks like he don't know us too well because y'all just lost, end quote. And it wasn't only Lawrence and Cooper that the Rams were bent about. One Rams player told Robert Klemko, quote, "When I see Stephen A. Smith, I'm going to smack him upside his head," end quote. See, the Rams, though, they didn't wait. They didn't wait to smack guys upside their heads. They were smacking anybody and everybody. If you had a star on the side of your helmet, you were probably getting punched in the face. For a team that was not running the way they would have liked recently, they did whatever the hell they wanted on the ground to the Cowboys. 273 yards and 3 touchdowns on the ground. Gouge them. And that's a team that you're not supposed to be able to run the ball against. And they ran it right down their throats all game long. And while everybody focuses on the Rams' skill position players and their head coach, it's easy to forget about the Ram offensive line. Those guys reminded everybody on Saturday night, don't forget about us. They dominated a Cowboy front seven that shut down the best running game in the league a week earlier. As Andrew Whitworth had said, the offensive line heard what DeMarcus Lawrence said about stealing souls. Quote, we heard it. He didn't get crap all night, and they got buried. I think we've said all we need to say, end quote. And speaking of guys getting buried, how about CJ freaking Anderson? He was buried a few weeks back. He was cut by Carolina in November, signed by Oakland in early December, cut a week later. When the Rams called, this guy was in the process of moving from a rental home in Charlotte back to his permanent home in Texas. He admits he had given up on this year football-wise. My man was carrying boxes. He had toted the rock for a total of 104 yards in 2018. Then the Rams call, he answers. Then they call on Saturday night, and he answers again. 23 carries, 123 yards, 2 touchdowns. His third straight 100-yard game for the Rams. This guy's a freaking beast. An absolute load to bring down. So if you want to come for CJ Anderson, I suggest you come in a pack because he's not going down with one guy and he's not going down with an arm tackle. As he told MMQB, quote, I heard the soul comment. I also heard the O, CJ Anderson. He had 2 games against the Niners and the Cardinals comment. You don't look into that. I let my game speak for itself. Obviously, the O-line took that personally. So we just let our game speak for itself. Every team is going to have a player, whoever that is, that's going to jaw-jack. And of course, we have some jaw-jackers on our team too. End quote. They do. They've got some jaw-jackers. They've got some soul-stealers. And they've got some guys that'll punch you in the face. Maybe it's the extra week off. But one thing was clear. The Cowboys had prided themselves on their physicality, but the Rams were way more physical on both sides of the ball, and it wasn't even close. They rushed for 273 yards. Then they held the Cowboys to 50 yards rushing. So much for that idea that Dallas was just going to come into LA, take over the Coliseum, and run all over the Rams. Cowboy fans showed up, but so did the Rams on both sides of the ball. And that tells you everything you need to know about Sean McVay as a head coach. See, everybody with a head coach has been looking for the next Sean McVay. While that was going on, though, Sean McVay was looking for his first playoff win. And I mentioned it last week. The guy had to have it. The Rams are no longer that nice story that they were last season. Now they're a team with enormous expectations, a big bullseye on their back, and they're on the clock now. They had to deliver. And they did. And while everybody wants to make out McVay and talk about McVay for his wide-open offense, his crazy passing schemes, his jet sweeps, this guy just won a must-win football game with power football. He outpowered a power football team, even to the point of going for it on fourth and goal in the fourth quarter when a field goal made more sense from a math standpoint, not from an attitude and confidence standpoint. So if you want to know what makes this guy great, what makes this guy so unique, what makes this guy so different, it's not the pass plays that he draws up. It's the way that this guy connects with his players, the way he understands them, and the way they understand him. And now you get the Saints. Man, I cannot wait. That clock can't spin quickly enough. Can't wait, and neither can the Rams, Todd Gurley said. Todd Gurley said this about his knee and about the win this weekend.
Feels good.
Really good?
Real good. Great, actually. Okay. But this ain't shit. We still got one more. Keep winning. We got to keep winning.
Feels good, but this ain't bleep. We still got one more. Keep winning. We got to keep winning. Man, freaking ram it. So impressive. Really impressive, but this is a different deal. Damn, Alvy, you will not believe who I have an email from right here. This is old school. Like, there's nobody next to you from the 2.0 XR4TI that even knows who this guy is. Like, Chael brought this in and probably brought it in because Hawk said it was okay to bring in. Do you guys know who this is? Wow, this is old school. Dear Jim, who does that emailer think he is cracking on Rams fans and SoCal culture? As a longtime Ram fan who has been watching them since before Thanksgiving. Here you go. As a longtime Rams fan who has been watching them since before Thanksgiving. And as somebody who lives in SoCal, when I'm not Instagramming from my Hawaii beach house, I take these insults personally. If my Escalade wasn't stuck in traffic caused by all these stupid teachers striking because they're too poor to afford Botox, I would drive straight to that loser's trailer park and make fun of him for not owning custom-made suits or having a personal trainer. Thanks. Signed, Rams fan. Alvy, Stu in Manhattan. Oh, man. What were Stu's glory days? When your battery loses its power, you lose your ability to get out, get around, and get things done. When it's time to replace your battery, trust the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts to help you choose the superstar battery that is an exact fit for your car. Whether it's reliable economy, hardworking premium, or powerful extreme, O'Reilly Auto Parts has a superstar battery that you need at a guaranteed low price. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts. Better prices every day. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Good friend of the program, John Morosi, joins us. John, nice to have you on. How are you?
Jim, outstanding. Happy New Year to you, my friend. Great to be back on the air with you. Love this time of year with all the hot stoves still happening and a really unique baseball football story here with the young Kyler Murray.
In fact, that's where I'm going to start. I was going to say, John, Happy New Year, but I thought, man, I don't do stuff like that on the 14th, but I thought the exact same thing. Happy New Year. Nice to have you back. All right, so why don't
thank you. I always feel like, Jim, anytime we can bring joy to each other's lives, my friend, it's always a good thing to start something with a Happy New Year greeting. I always think it's a good time to say that.
Nice job. I agree with you. All right, so you mentioned Kyler Murray. Let's start right there. It's one of the bigger stories in two different sports at the moment. Today is a significant day, John, but before we get into that, what do you make of how this particular story has changed over the last few weeks?
Well, it's really fascinating, Jim. And, of course, originally the plan, and then going back to the summer, was that Kyler Murray was going to play one more year with Oklahoma and then turn pro in baseball. And no one probably, at least maybe certainly those close to him, probably knew what he could do, but wasn't widely expected to win the Heisman this year. Of course, now we know what's happened. And I think that the deeper he has gone into it, Jim, he probably realizes that as he is moving up the draft boards and there's a greater, I think, awareness in the NFL about what he could do at that level, that once you know, or at least you're confident that you'd be a first-round NFL draft pick, then the notion of having to give up your MLB signing bonus to turn pro and play football is much less daunting because he'll probably get even more money guaranteed up front to play in the NFL. And also, there is no need to play in the minor leagues. I mean, as we speak here right now, Jim, he has just played two seasons of varsity baseball at the University of Oklahoma, about 238 collegiate plate appearances. So he's got a long way to go to catch up with his peers. And I think it's important to note that you look at someone like Ronald Acuna Jr., one of the stars of the National League this year, Rookie of the Year. He is actually younger than Kyler Murray, had 1,000 at-bats in the minor leagues and is now already a star in the major leagues, which gives you an idea, Jim, of just how much time Kyler Murray has to spend to get back up to speed on the baseball diamond.
These are all really good points. John Morosi joining us. Now, the significance of today, John, today is the deadline for underclassmen to declare for the NFL draft. If Murray does so before midnight tonight, what impact, if any, will that have on his baseball future?
Well, it's interesting. Today, on this day, Jim, very little, because what that does is just preserves the option for him to continue to consider the National Football League, and I would imagine that his advice, his counsel, the information coming into him would probably increase as he gets more information once he declares, as a lot of people expect him to do today. So this does not meaningfully change his baseball future yet. I say yet because, of course, we know what happens next month. You've got two things: the start of spring training, and the NFL Scouting Combine. And you can't be in both places at once. If Murray goes to spring training for a week and then leaves to go to the Combine, based on what I'm told, Jim, that would be a breach of the guarantee language of his contract, and he would have to give up his signing bonus at that point in time. So he can really, at that point in time, probably in the next several weeks, you have to make a decision. And basically, he's due to report for Major League Spring Training with the Oakland Athletics 1 month from almost today. And so once he arrives there, then the assumption would be, if he does, that he'll be a baseball player from that point forward. He is not going to try to play both sports at the same time. But again, he's got a few weeks now to make a final decision. Does he go to spring training? Does he go to the combine? He cannot do both.
John Morosi joining us. He, in fact, got to my very next point. I was going to say, John, you can't be in two places at one time, but there have been athletes in the past who have been able to play both professional baseball and professional football at the same time. Is it in any way, and you touched on this, but is it in any way possible in his case?
Not right now, not concurrently, from what I can tell, Jim. I think there have been cases, certainly Drew Henson played baseball and then went back and played football, and I think Drew would probably tell us if he were having a conversation with us today that he may handle things a little bit differently if he had to do it all over again. He told me once that he wanted to go back, and if he could do it all over again, he would have played his senior year of football at Michigan and waited to make that final determination once he had one more final year of football, and perhaps that would have nudged him toward playing in the National Football League instead of for the New York Yankees. So it's we've seen in the past, certainly we remember well the careers of Deion Sanders and Bo Jackson and Brian Jordan. But for an NFL quarterback, Jim, today, I think it's even more complicated than it was for Drew Henson basically a generation ago, where the position is so demanding at the highest level of football in our country that it really is doing a disservice to the player to ask him to do both. So Kyler Murray would have to choose one or the other. I think that everybody, his advisors, I know I spoke with one of the people in his camp here the last couple days, and that there's an acknowledgement there that he's not even going to really try to do both. As much as he might love to do it, it's not going to be attempted, at least at this point in time. Now, notably, if he decides to play football, the A's would continue to hold his rights as long as they can find a spot for him on a minor league roster and keep him protected on one of those lists, which is not all that hard to do. But notably, of course, Russell Wilson originally was a member of the Colorado Rockies and has been to spring training now with the Rangers and the Yankees because he is still somewhere on a minor league roster. So it's a very unique circumstance, but I would imagine that the Oakland Athletics, while not owing him the bonus any longer, would at least still retain his rights should Kyler decide to pursue the NFL at this time.
John Morosi breaking it all down for us. All right, John, so in the case of Oakland, what is their pitch to Murray right now?
Well, it's a great question, and part of that, Jim, is the marketing side of things. They actually had a meeting yesterday with Scott Boras and of course, his agent on the baseball side, the A's front office, key members there, Billy Bean, I believe David Forrest, the GM, was there too, and also some marketing executives from MLB that wanted to come down and speak to Kyler about what he could do off the field as an ambassador for the sport here across the country and what commercial success that could bring him as well. So that's part of it. MLB, based on what I've been told, Jim, would permit the Oakland Athletics to give Kyler a major league contract at this point in time, which is not typically done for a player who has not yet made his major league debut upon being drafted. It used to be under previous basic agreements that you could have a major league deal, not under the current one, but in this case, MLB is comfortable, from what I've been told, with the A's giving him that major league deal, probably a little extra money there as a further incentive, perhaps, for him to choose baseball. So it's really a fascinating time for the sport. I think baseball, people around the game, and Jeff Passan's reported on this, and Ken Rosenthal as well, that people around the game want to see Kyler play baseball. He'd be great for baseball, great for the notoriety of the game. But we all realize the bright lights, Jim, and the allure of being an NFL quarterback, especially a first-round pick, which by all accounts, or at least many accounts, Kyler Murray is likely to be should he continue to pursue football.
John Morosi all over that angle. All right, John, thanks for that. Listen, the other big story of the offseason has been the free agency of Bryce Harper and Manny Machado. Overall, what do you make of how free agency has panned out for both of them?
Slow. Certainly here we are in the middle of January, and neither is signed yet. I don't think it's totally surprising that this is the case, but it is notable that here we are with another offseason when waiting is the operative method by a lot of teams, and it's because it works. You saw the Red Sox last year, they signed J.D. Martinez after spring training began. they won the World Series. Bryce Harper, a big meeting over the weekend with the Philadelphia Phillies in his hometown of Las Vegas. Reports say the Phillies are potentially moving to the forefront of the Harper sweepstakes. I was told by a source over the weekend that the Phillies feel good about their chances to get either Harper or Machado. And a report yesterday from Jeff Passan, the White Sox have now expanded their offer to be 8 years to Manny Machado. So we could see Harper go to the Phillies. We could see Machado go to the White Sox. And then once that happens, Jim, we should get a lot more clarity on the rest of the marketplace, even though I think I was of the mind, and I know we talked about this back in the summertime, I think that Harper would have been a great fit with the Los Angeles Dodgers and may still be, but the Dodgers, Jim, are being very discerning about going beyond 5 or 6 years for Harper, and Harper, of course, wants much more than that.
You know, I'm going to try and double back to that, but if, in fact, he had that meeting with Philadelphia and it went pretty well and it was a five-hour meeting, how do you think he would fit in with that Philly roster?
Well, I think, Jim, he would be a really nice middle part of the lineup, of course, unto himself. He's got such great presence. This is a team that really faded down the stretch, and they finished the year right around 500 in a very competitive division. The Nationals, of course, Harper's most recent team, they got a lot better. They brought in Patrick Corbin. I thought it was a very good deal for them to bring in Brian Dozier and a new catching tandem, Yan Gomes and Kurt Suzuki. So the Nationals have made a number of really good moves, and we've seen the Mets make some pretty big splashes. And oh, by the way, the Braves are the reigning division champions, and they brought in Josh Donaldson and Brian McCann. So it's a very, very competitive division. But I think for the Phillies, they look at it and say, listen, if we can bring in Bryce Harper, take him away from the roster of one of our competitors in the division, the Nationals, and put him on our team, he would make everyone better. And I think, Jim, one thing that I look at in baseball nowadays, the best teams in free agency, the ones that have the greatest incentive to act, have a greater narrative around their pursuit than just simply filling a spot in the roster. The Phillies, we know, they're a team that's won the World Series about a decade ago. They've got the capacity to really up their payroll, play in a major East Coast market. They just have to find the right ways to allocate that money, and they've been really expecting to spend big, so he's the perfect guy if you want to spend big. Manny Machado on the south side of Chicago, same thing, a team that has to announce its return to the baseball landscape as being a really relevant team. When you want to announce your arrival, Jim, spending on big players like Harper and Machado is a fine way to do that.
All right, John, so I get those narratives. What about the narrative as it relates to the L.A. Dodgers? They go back to the World Series again. They come up short again. What do you make of how they've approached the offseason, including the recent trade for Russell Martin?
Curious, I think, Jim. Of course, that they began the offseason by retaining Clayton Kershaw, but they have made a number of moves that, to me, if I'm a Dodger fan, would be unsatisfying. They could have potentially acquired JT Realmuto in via the trade market, even DJ LeMahieu to play second base. Instead, DJ goes to the New York Yankees, and by all accounts, it appears that the Dodgers are a little bit on the periphery of the Harper sweepstakes. This is simply the way that Andrew Friedman has run organizations for a long time. He has not been someone who has tied too much of his future into one player. It's much more of a collective approach with the farm system and finding really solid, overlooked players like Chris Taylor and Max Muncy. So in addition to the stars, of course, as we mentioned with Clayton Kershaw, they've got a great young star in Walker Buehler. But for a team, to your point, Jim, that's been just a little bit short each of the last 2 years, if you expected to see a dramatic move by the Los Angeles Dodgers, yes, they made the rental move of Machado in the month of July, but we have not seen that aggressive, bold play from them. I believe this wintertime we'll see if something changes with the likes of a Harper or maybe a more dramatic trade that we're not quite anticipating at this point in time.
John Morosi joining us. John, one last guy really quickly. How likely is it in your mind that Cleveland moves Corey Kluber, and if so, where do you see him going?
I think it's at least 50-50, Jim. The Indians have to find a way to strengthen their outfield. They've got a very little bit of depth there in the outfield right now, so I think they're probably going to look to move Kluber, if they do, to get multiple outfielders back. And one team that's been very consistent in their interest in Kluber, the San Diego Padres. Now, the Dodgers have been interested as well, and I could see the Brewers or Phillies, depending on different circumstances, but the Padres have a really good mix of young, major league caliber position players. Manuel Margot, Hunter Renfroe, they even got some young pitching too, Eric Lauer and Joey Lucchese potentially to put in that move as well. So I would say if I'm going to watch carefully on Kluber, watch very closely the San Diego Padres, a team that has at different times gotten serious about contending. Now they see with the Diamondbacks and the division starting to rebuild, perhaps an opportunity for them to land Kluber and challenge the Dodgers.
You can see my guest on MLB Network, NHL Network, Fox Sports, John Morosi, always on point, all over it. John, great to have you back. Happy New Year, my friend.
Happy New Year to you, Jim. And by the way, how about Snoop Dogg calling the play-by-play of that hockey game for the Kings the other day? That was awesome.
Was that so good? Really quickly, I got about a minute. What did you make of that?
He's a big hockey fan. I love it.
Were you putting up a bigger fight to stay in first class than the doctor who was flying United? Yeah, that was not me. I was not going to do that. It was not that important to me. All right, I'll have that for you in a minute. That whole thing about Jason Garrett getting an extension, allegedly, reportedly, like I said, obviously winning is not the thing. Just being in contention is the thing. Winning the division every so often is the thing. Having people look at you and talk about you is the thing if you're the Cowboys and you're Jera. But you know what the biggest thing is? The biggest thing is having a coach who will do exactly what you tell him to do. Having a coach that's not demanding authority and power and a say over personnel. Having a coach that just kind of blends in. Obviously, if you're going to give this guy a five-year extension based on a playoff win, not a Super Bowl win, not a Super Bowl appearance, but winning a playoff game, that tells you where their priorities are. He's not going anywhere now. All right, so he mentioned, were you putting up a bigger fight to stay in first class than the doctor who was flying United? Really quickly, if you want this story. So Friday, I'm flying out of Southern California to go to Dallas for the store managers convention for O'Reilly. I do this every single year. It's one of my favorite events. So I do the show. I run off to the airport. I get on a flight. And as I mentioned earlier, I'm not trying to be a bag about this in any way, but one of the perks and one of the bennies of doing this as long as I have is, you know, often, fairly often, I can fly towards the front. Usually in business, sometimes in first. It's kind of nice. I'm not going to lie. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and lie. It's nice. It's good. I've worked pretty hard for a pretty long time, and we buy the tickets. All right, so nothing's comped. It's all on the up and up. It's all straight. And that's how that is. So I'm trying to hustle to the airport to get on the plane to make sure I hit this appearance. And it's going to be one of those deals where I probably have to get off the airplane and go right to the event just to make the timing. So you don't want any travel snafus. I get on the airplane, minding my own business, kind of zoned out a little bit, long work week, keeping my head right, looking at my phone. And a flight attendant comes over and says, "Are you Mr. Rome?" I said, "Yes." She said, "Sir, I'm going to have to ask you to go back to coach. And I've got a couple of options for you." And she goes right into it. "I've got a couple of options for you. You can be in row 18 on the aisle, or you can be in row 20 on the window with nobody in the center seat. Which would you prefer?" It's like some crazy closing technique, right? I'm like, "Wait, what? I'm sitting in 4E in first class, and you're telling me my choices are 18 or 20? What's going on here? Am I in trouble? What happened?" "No, sir. What's going on is there is a seat that is broken, and the gentleman over there has that seat, but we're moving him to your seat, and you need to go back." I said, "Okay, listen, I feel badly for the gentleman over there, but why is he not going back, and why am I going back? Can you just kind of explain this to me?" "I mean, it's all fine. It's not great, but it's fine." She's like, "Sir, the reason that he is not going back and that you are going back is because you are first on the downgrade list." I said, "Wow, really? How lucky am I?" Let me ask you one thing really quickly. And I'm thinking about which I like better, 18 on the aisle or 20 on the window without the center seat. What exactly is a downgrade list? I've heard of being first on the upgrade list, but what is first on the downgrade list? What is that? "I don't know, sir, but we checked it and you are on it, so we need for you to go back." You know, hey, listen, most of the world flies in aisle 20. I'm never going to complain about something I have to do Sometimes it's fine. And no names mentioned, American Airlines. What the hell is a downgrade list? What is that? Why is this? Okay, the seat's broken. I get that. You can't fix a seat. But really, really, why am I going back and why isn't he? I mean, isn't it the luck of the draw? Like, my seat's fine. Anyway, sir, you are first on the downgrade list. And at this point, I'm like, I'm not ending up on any video. I'm like, yes, ma'am, I will go back. So I go back, and I'm still trying to figure out what the downgrade list is. But I go back, and then there's somebody sitting in my second seat. And this guy's looking at me and he goes, is this your seat? I'm like, apparently it is now. What's up, bro? He goes, would you mind going back over there to row 23 where I was sitting? I'm like, yeah, bro, why not? I mean, I've already moved once. What's going on? He's like, I just want to be here next to my girlfriend. I'm like, you got it. No worries. So now I shuffle over to row 23, trying to figure out what's going on and how I made first on the downgrade list. And then they come back and the flight attendant says, sir, I am really sorry about this. And I said, yeah, that's fine. She goes, you know what? You know what we're going to do for you? We're going to give you as many drinks as you want for free. And I'm like, you mean like that deal I had up front already? No, thank you. I'm fine. I don't want any drinks. I'm working. I have to go work. I don't want, no. I was not going to drink. And then she comes back and says, sir, we will serve you food first. I'm like, that's fine. But then I'm the biggest D-bag because I'm back there where they don't get served food first, and they got to pay for it, and they're just bringing me my food. So it's all bad, right? It's all bad. Then she brings me the voucher. Sir, here is your voucher for a couple $100. I'm like, great. I kind of want that seat, but it's fine. It's good. And I didn't, at this point, I'm not even doing the math. I'm like, what's the difference between, anyway, forget it. It's fine. Stop coming back and trying to make it right. It's fine. It's good. It's fine. I'm good. I'm fine. Sir, what is your email address? We want to give you points. It's fine. It's good. It's fine. But then the best part was another flight attendant comes back and says, sir, I am sorry and they keep coming. I'm like, it's fine. It's fine. I swear it's fine. She says, sir, I just want to tell you, I'm sorry, but your seat was broken. I'm like, whoa, okay. All right. Because your colleague told me his seat was broken and he's sitting in my seat now. So how can my seat be broken? One of you is not telling the truth. If you want to keep this conversation going. So it's fine. It's like a 2-hour flight. It's good. It's fine. The story's funny now. Now it's funny, and I love being on the downgrade list, whatever that is. But then I get off the plane, and like they're waiting for me, and then it got awkward. And they're like, we are investigating this. I'm like, it's fine. God, it's fine. Can I go? Can I please go to the convention center and hang out with my pals at the O'Reilly convention? Please. We are investigating. Don't investigate. It's fine. Whatever. It happened. It's good. It's fine. Anyway, there is a downgrade list, and I was number one on it. That was cool. So anyway, that is your travel story. That was on Friday night. Got in, made it to a hotel before the appearance, hung out with my pals at O'Reilly's convention for the store managers, flew out the next morning. Everything was cool. No Wi-Fi, but that'll happen, I guess. Got to hang out with my man, Craig Kitchen. My boy, Brandon. Saw Becky from O'Reilly's. It was good. It was fun. I just know y'all like travel stories. Christopher tweets, did you hear the helicopter drop when they moved you 16 rows back? Dude, right? Bravo, well played. Nicely done, Chris. I did not, but they should have, man. That would have been the best. If they had dropped that on me, if that flight attendant said, are you Mr. Rome? And I said, yes. If she had said to me, maybe you've heard this before. If she'd like broke out her phone and hit play on that, that would have been the best. I would have been like, well, wait a minute. Are you taking my golden ticket? And her response would have said, yes! Over the PA system would have been awesome. May I have your attention, please? May I have your attention, please? Is there a Jim Rome on this flight? Yeah, is everything all right? Not for you, bro! That would have been awesome. Come on, man. If you're going to do me like that, do it the right way. They should have played that over the PA system. That would have been so great. Dear Rome, the downgrade list isn't such a big deal. I've been on it since Smackoff 23. Signed, Dan in Denver. Matt in Vancouver. Unaware air travel being as consistently disappointing as the freaking Chargers. I mean, you are now free, Rome, to go back 20 rows where you belong. It's not, to me, it's not, and I fly a fair amount, it's not consistently disappointing, but I'd never heard that before. I mean, if I want to, I could open this thing up and say, I want to hear about your air travel. Have you ever heard of anything like that? I won't, because it's funny. But it would have been funnier if she did hit me with a smacky helicopter. Hey, Rome, warn me being first on the downgrade list if Jessica Alba divorces her husband, John in Huntington Beach. War downgrade list being part of our everyday lives. See, that's the thing. The downgrade list was the funniest thing, the funniest part about that. Of course, they had to say something, right? You can't just move me back there when I didn't do anything wrong. There has to be a reason for it. Like, I wonder if she has made that thing up on the spot. Like, what is a downgrade list? Because when the suits were waiting for me, they weren't forcing that down my throat. Like, sir, we are sorry, but our policy is there is a downgrade list. And as I mentioned, one of the other ones was lying. Totally contradicted it and said, your seat was broken. That's why you moved. It's almost like they were covering the downgrade list story, like covering that up. Just so you know, your seat's broken. Well, that's not what the other guy said. Other gal. Anyway. My point is, it's funny. It would have been funnier if they mocked me on the PA. Then it would have been really funny if they had taken my golden ticket. Because it felt like it after they took it away. That would have been even funnier if everybody knew about it too. The other guy had to be laughing so hard. Man, that seat probably was so comfortable. He had to have been like, damn, yeah, man. Sucks for him. Sucks for him. I mean, wouldn't you? Wouldn't I? Wait, that guy must have been like, wait, let me see if I have this straight. My seat's broken, but I get DJ Man's seat over there? Hell yeah. I think I'll have a cocktail. I think I'll have lots of cocktails. I think I'll go to Vegas. This is my big day.
Good night now!